We turn into Matthew chapter 18. Then we'll go to Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8 after that. Matthew 18. Well, we're continuing our study on one another relationships. And one another is the important relationship we have on this life, this earth, in that it expresses our attitude and our will about all these things that are of Christ, and also those things that are of neighbor. So it's an encompassing thing that really affects us all, our daily walk, whether we're with people at work, communicating with people in shopping, with our family. All those sort of things are things that one another is important. So we'll be continuing that tonight, especially the effect it can have on one another and the things that God has prescribed, written down, and commanded for us to think about when we deal with one another. And tonight we're going to start with a Q on our list on page 33. Do not cause one another to stumble. Now this gets pretty serious. That's why I want to start with number 18, or Matthew 18, 7 through 9. Woe to the world because of its stumbling blocks. For it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come. But woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. And if your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than having two hands or two feet to be cast to the eternal fire. Verse 9, and if your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and throw it from you. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than having two eyes to be cast to the fiery hell. And again, it started off, woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes. So Jesus has stressed something about this relationship, a one another relationship, that we need to watch what we say and what we do. It affects others' destiny, doesn't it? It affects our destiny, our eternal destiny. So let's look at our couple of verses, Romans 14, 13. Let me do 1 Corinthians 8 first, okay? 1 Corinthians 8, we'll do that first. And this is probably things that you know of. And I want to go through that tonight just to refresh our memories on that. Okay. 1 Corinthians 8, 8 through 13. Again, it says all in reference to liberties and reference to as they were converted, there was difficulties in what do you do with those meats that we were not supposed to eat? We do with calendars of, you know, days, or special worship days and special ceremonial days. So it had a lot of that. Do you carry that over? Should you do it in the religion of Christ, the faith of Christ? And in 8, but food will not commend us to God. We are neither the worse if we do eat, nor the better if we do eat. But take care lest this liberty of yours somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. Verse 10, for if someone sees you, who have knowledge, dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, that's the key, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? For though your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died, and thus, by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience, when it is weak, you sin against who? Christ. We don't want to be caught that way. We don't want to have that on our conscience. We don't want to have that marked against us in the book of life. So now let's go back to Romans 14. This again is that one another relationship. Romans 14, 13. Let's go to 12. So then each one of us shall give account of himself to God. And that's certainly true. Therefore, in 13, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother's way. When we talk of stumbling blocks, we're talking of something that, what can I say, it'll cause one to fall, came to fall. And that's the idea of sinning, needing the blood of Christ. And when we talk about stumbling blocks, let's just say we had a Muslim who had had a life of doing those things that Muslims do, prayer 5 times a day, no pork, all those sort of things, not even touching it. And he's converted to the gospel. And he's converted. But he has a question. Or he sees you eating pork, or you invite him over, you have pork, and you say to him, or he asks, what about the pork? I don't know, I'm still uneasy about this. I still have something inside of me that says maybe I shouldn't deal with that pork. His conscience is talking to him. But you say to him, you know, you're just a young guy. You know, you don't understand. Go and eat the pork. But he's not really convinced deep down, is he? He still thinks it's because the religion of Christ, you know, says I shouldn't eat this pork, but I still don't want to touch it. So what's happened? He's got his conscience is pricking him. His conscience is telling him, I don't want to do that. But you're the one causing him, yeah, go ahead. That's why it's an interesting point when Paul says, I won't eat meat the rest of my life. It causes one to stumble. Even though there's nothing wrong with it, still a violation of conscience. So in Romans 14, a one another relationship, there's things we need to watch out when we give advice. Because woe to the one who causes that stumbling. All right? So that's one thing to think about in life, okay, as we go through it and how we deal with others. Now, is this love? It is, isn't it? Surely is, okay? And it's even very serious. And again, love for one another. And again, not love for me and you. It's love for your eternal destiny. Sin, no sin. Sin count against you or not. And conscience is involved in that. A conscience is trained by your environment. So it's things you need to always examine it and look at it and maybe some changes or modifications. But the point is, think about that.
I understand that it wouldn't be a sin for him to eat pork, and I understand that it would hurt his conscience to eat pork. But is that not the same as, you know, the people then having a hard time not reverting back to Judaism? It's pricking their conscience. It doesn't seem right, but it is right. So what in that case, I mean, would they have said? I mean, because
He doesn't want them to go back to Judaism, not at all. Because then you'd accept all those meals, the holy days, and all that sort of thing. So don't do that. But I'm telling you now that you've still got this your conscience rolling around inside of you. So he's went like just like we saw him. I didn't read it, but he wanted to become a vegetarian. God just don't want any meats. See, and that's the conscience and the liberty you have to make that choice.
So now the doctrinal issue is where you draw the line.
Well, the conscience is what we're dealing with. Okay, all right. Again, there's nothing wrong with the meat; you could eat it, but you've got a conscience problem, and that is, Christ has said that's a sin against. That's
so
a sin.
Hurt someone's conscience to not have a piano in their worship.
Well, or a steeple on the building, or. You know, there's all kind of things. So head coverings, it goes on and on. There's a lot of things, all right, that you can deal with. But to try to convince someone to violate their conscience, okay, on a matter of liberty, okay?
Wouldn't you go back to communication? I would want to narrow down, is it a conscience because you have studied this? and you still feel pork is wrong? Or is it a, I'm still going back to traditions that I was raised with and I'm still not sure?
It's a mix.
So I would want to, in talking with them, find out where their issues,
where is this deep seated?
Where is it being questioned? Mm-hmm. Is it questioned because of what they've studied, or is it questioned because it was how they raised?
A lot of it is how they're raised, or the part of the world or country or you're raised in. And those are things that travel with people in life. And can you study yourself out of that? Yes. Yes, but until you do, okay, sometimes that's your best advocate to teaching another, that you've actually worked yourself out of this to convince yourself. And your conscience can be retrained. No problem with that.
And that would be a door open to studying more.
Sure, sure. You could be an expert in that sort of thing, all right? But there's things that we need to think about. And again, Christ put some emphasis on it. The apostle put emphasis on it. And it's things that we need to be aware of in our one another relationship. Can it hurt a relationship? Sure can. All right. Yes.
Just speaking about health reasons.
Yeah. I mean, Romans 14 goes into all kind of areas, whether it's tattoos or crosses, or you can imagine a Roman Catholic with a, and they studied in their initial studying and working, I don't want any symbols of a cross. Well, somebody wears a cross. You know, say maybe you shouldn't wear that cross around them or talk to them about it. So it's one of those things. There's all kind of issues that you can apply Romans 14 to. So just be aware of those sort of things when you're dealing with others.
Well, we have to remember these verses are not talking about the weak brother specifically. They're talking about us when we are dealing with the weak brother. Mm-hmm. If that ex-Muslim is not comfortable eating pork, yet you should not eat pork in front of him.
That's right.
Upset his conscience. Now, technically, there is nothing wrong with not eating pork. You know, so if he never comes around to eating pork, that's a different matter. But if he understands that there's nothing in our law that says that he can't eat pork and still chooses not to eat pork, that's up to him. But he has to understand, we have to make sure he understands all the things that are required of him.
And make sure we understand also.
And not spend our time on what, in a lot of ways, is irrelevancy. Because if you know he doesn't feel comfortable with pork, just never have pork when he's around. Now, he has to understand that you don't feel any problem with it. So that when he's not there, you might eat pork. You can't change your life because it's still your liberty, but you aren't supposed to run that kind of thing. But
let me say this, too, about
that you belong too fast.
The world recognizes that, too. If in a secular worldly view, if you're part of Alcoholics Anonymous, well, do you drink around someone who's a member of AA? Say, why are you doing that? See, that the influence, the temptation, all that sort of thing, okay? He doesn't want to drink because he knows it's harmful to him. Okay? And if we just had attitudes like that about don't want to sin, yes, sir?
Doug, I think you might have mentioned this in your comments, but here in Romans 14, the last verse, violate your conscience and sin. So doctrinally, this Muslim, doctrinally, he's incorrect. If he violates his conscience and sin to him. So we don't want to push him or, you know, test him.
Yes.
We might want to teach him, but yeah. I mean, to him, it is sin. That's God's law. It's kind of a principle there that's kind of sometimes tough to understand. Was how can something be sin when doctrinally it's untrue?
That's why God has put the stress here in at least two places strongly, okay, that this conscience is very important, because what tells you what's right and wrong in life, but tells you to question something, hold back on, let me think about this some more. What does that? Your environment, what you've been exposed to, what you've read, studied, all those sort of things, part of the country, whatever it is, okay, all make an influence on that. So those are things, that's why when we talk about edification of a local congregation, okay, and your own personal edification, is educating yourself. And that takes reading and study and that sort of thing. And you know if something bothers your conscience, you can work on it. All right? And again, that one another relationship. All right. Appreciate the comments. And our next one, R, is Romans 16:16. And page two over. And this is, again, one another relationship. This is greet one another with a holy kiss. It's a greeting. It's a well-being sort of thing. Wish you well. It's a greeting. But it's interesting. It's not more than a greeting. It's a holy kiss. In their days, they had a kiss. And we see that, I guess, in France now. They still do that. All right? I guess other countries do. Not in Ireland, I don't think. All right? But the point is, this holy kiss is a kiss that is, what can I say, genuine, sincere, one of those kind of greetings that has some validity behind it, that it's not just a passing nothing comment. I know I've done myself. If somebody say, hey, how are you? I say, oh, I'm dying. Just to see if they heard what I said. Some of them just go on. But that's kind of a... But the point is, when we deal with greetings of people, they should be sincere and genuine. How are you doing? And not to be afraid to have a follow-up comment. Oh, have some discussion. Because again, that's that one another relationship, see, of care and concern and love and looking for opportunities to serve one another.
Mark. The concept of holy is with pure intent, without an adulterated agenda, a mindset. Even if we're literally to be a kiss, that the kiss has no more meaning than the well-being of the person being greeted.
Yep.
So that's what holy attaches.
So just something to think about, okay, when we do greet one another. Yes, sir. Fine lady. Candace, fine lady. All right, so appreciate that. Okay, so was it a problem? Well, I don't know. It's Paul took the time to write it down and to be preserved for us today through Providence. So it's something to think about when we deal with our one another relationship. And the bottom line, be genuine. Okay? We don't have false pretenses or false appearances, that sort of thing. All right. The next one is S, Colossians 3:16, and sing to one another. And as we've looked at that, just to stress another one another relationship that we have, and we have 3:16, let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Where's the one another part of this? What are we doing when we're singing?
Teaching and admonishing.
Well, teaching and admonishing, yes. Teaching, warning. But we're also talking to each other, aren't we? Aren't we talking to each other? Sure. There's some harmony involved and all that sort of thing. But we're talking to each other about the majesty of God. We're talking to God about how my attitude should be. We're talking to each other about those things that are what we do in worship one with another, okay? And what we do in worship to God. So there's a lot of things we're doing when we sing, so why not? Why not think of it as one another, talking to one another? All right? As a matter of fact, we read songs in our hymnal sometimes, don't we? Okay? And sometimes I think we get more out of them when we read them than when we're singing. But we can think about that. And matter of fact, many of you committed those to memory. Why not? Why not just sing those during the day? All right? So just a matter, there's another one another relationship, an opportunity when we're together, okay, to edify one another and to promote love. Yes, sir?
I think in this passage, the idea when it says that you're teaching and watching one of the songs, it's singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. It tend to think that's talking about a favor we have with each other. You know, that the relationship we have with each other, we're not hostile or you know, we're at peace and we have love with one another and we're joining in fellowship, singing together, edifying each other, praising God.
And along with that grace word you're talking about is thanksgiving, okay, is also in the different versions. Why do we have something to be thankful for? Because we're in this relationship in Christ. We're a member of a local congregation that has harmony and unity, that we're working towards that, that's considerate to one another. Why shouldn't we? Okay, be thankful for that. Not to mention be thankful for the blood of Christ. Okay? So those are things that we can sing about, talk to each other about, teach one another about. Okay? And consequently, our responsibility to sing and our responsibility to the song leader. Okay? Like we see the themes in the singing we do, you know, that sort of thing. Sunday theme. It's good. All right. Romans 12:15. Pretty straightforward. We've been through before. Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And this has a connotation I was reading about being in the presence of the individual. What's the value in if someone has inward pain and grief and those sort of things and you're weeping with them? Or there's a new birth or someone's healed or there's some good thing, perceived or not, is happened. Okay? Why not rejoice with them? All right? What's the value in that one another relationship?
Sociology class, they refer to the term empathy. Empathy, a person having not sympathy for the other person, but they want to feel what that person feels. You know, in other words, relationship.
It's a heightened connection, isn't it? The heightened connection of empathy for them, like you're saying. And those are things that evolve emotion, don't they? Yeah, yeah. Joy, gladness. See, weeping, sorrow. We have ups and downs in our life, and we need support, one another, a local congregation. That's why it's good to know each other, know what's going on, okay? There's so many things going on that doesn't make the announcements. But there's things in life that we need to know about one another because we're a family, brothers and sisters. And kind of a standoff idea. Do you learn when you share grief or you share joy with people? Do you learn from that experience? Yeah, one way or another, okay, or whatever. Point is, though, was you don't want to be hardened to it, but the idea of learning how to empathize with others, to have grace in your heart. Yeah. What's going to prick you to change your life, first thing?
Yeah.
Conscience? Maybe so. All right. You withdraw from one who is impenitent. Well, as we look at 2 Thessalonians, I'm sure we're of course 1 Corinthians 5 and 5, trying to save the soul, but 2 Thessalonians 3. I'm going to look at 2:15 first. So then, brethren, stand firm and hold to the traditions which you were taught, whether by word of mouth or by letter from us. Stand firm in the things you got from the apostles' doctrine. And in 3:4, and we have confidence in the Lord concerning you, that you are doing and will continue to do what we command. Strong word. And in verse 6, now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that's strong, that you keep aloof from every brother who leads an unruly life, and not according to traditions which you have received from us. So those things have been handed down, traditions, or apostolic hand-me-downs, okay, and valuable, even here as a command. So people who are impenitent, people who have really thrown away Christ in their lives, there's a warning here in verse 15, and yet do not regard him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. So when you haven't associated with him and that sort of thing, well, are you going to? He's not a brother anymore because he's been put away, okay? Because he's denied Christ. But you're going to work with him, aren't you? See? Okay, try to get to the conscience. Change the conscience. Try to get to the idea that we are one another here in life together. And that when you die, when your eternity is at your doorstep, you want to be with Christ forever. So the things to work with and that. But the aloof part, stay away from in the social realm and that sort of thing, is something that God's plan. God's plan. All right. And as you look through those many verses dealing with it, and again, 1 Corinthians 5:5 is save his soul. So he'll be saved. That's the object. And can we invent some other way to do it? I hope we don't. Okay? Because it's God's plan. And we see with the brother in Corinth, it worked with him. At least for the majority of the congregation in the church in Corinth. Now, when we talk of withdrawal, is it who's it applied to? Everyone in the congregation, right? Name Christ? Yeah, is your. Do you single out certain peoples that are not applicable to? See, it's a little thing to think about in the application of the verses. Now, if an individual still lives at home, you know, and it's under your supervision, that's a different kind of animal because there's a different relationship involved in there. We've talked about different relationships in life, okay, that you need to maintain them, husband and wife and that sort of thing. And if a husband or wife is withdrawn from, well, you don't withdraw from the marriage because that's an other relationship. All right. Pray for one another. We've got James 5:16. And what does, in James 5:16, what does that confession and prayer lead to? What does it lead to in James 5:16? Spiritual healing. When you talk to God, when you're expressing who He is, where your faith rests, that your hope of your eternity and where that is, and what you committed in your life to do, and to say, and to think, that you worked on your conscience, then confession and prayer is that sort of talking to God to let him know what your mind is about. Of course, he knows already. Doesn't that verbalize it when you pray? Doesn't it do something to teach you, learn you, put things in words and thoughts? So prayer is that part, personally. So, but when you pray for one another, what happens? God hears that, doesn't he? Okay, he sees the priorities in your life. And we can have rote prayer, and there's value in that. But also when you pray for one another, because we know what's happening with one another. God hears that. Okay? And if His will and His providence, things can be dealt with. All right? And it may spur us also to concentrate more on that individual or that family or even ourselves. Okay? To do what we can. Okay? To help. Okay? Because we don't want our faith to get weak. Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It also shows the connection to one another. It shows humbleness of heart on, you know, maybe even both parties, you know, the one who's doing the confessing, the one who is going to others for prayer, and then the ones that he's going to, if they're not arrogant and, you know, I'm above this, same feels for that. But, you know, it shows that one another connection, you know, and that who's doing this.
It gives us a way to express the one another connection, isn't it? Okay, those sort of things. So be aware of that. And just a point in Ephesians 6, 18 and 19, verse 19, is to be bold, determined. Bold and determined, you can pray for that in your service to Christ. It doesn't be for people, it can be for your service and opportunities to deal with those things that are in Christ one to another. You can pray for those. All right. And there's miscellaneous in Ephesians 4:25, which we went through over in Part P. And Ephesians 5:21 is an interesting verse. Ephesians 5:21. Again, let's see. And it simply says, be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. Okay? Be subject to one another. If we're thinking about the one another relationship, if we're thinking about concern, if we're thinking about love, then if we're thinking about that, is not the other's well-being in view when we're dealing with another person. Okay? And not their well-being is in view when we're dealing with that. So, would sometimes you subject yourself to a decision or something? Okay. I know in marriage, sometimes there's two points, two things to do or more than two. But which one do we do? Well, do I need to have my way or does she need to have her way all the time? It's not a 50-50. But the point is, there's things that need to be thought about to maintain, okay, harmony, to maintain my ability not to be selfish with decisions, okay, and what actions to take. So those things are things to think about when we're dealing with subjecting yourself one to another. You know, sometimes one decision is just as good as another. It really is. Whether it's the color of the paint on a wall in your house, okay, or what car you buy, okay, you reason it out. But the point is, sometimes is it worth a battle? And God says it's not worth a battle. Be subject to one another and those sort of things. All right? And maturity will see you acting on those the way you should. All right. And again, stay away from arrogance and selfish pride and that sort of thing. So again, with one another. Well, where are we going to go eat today? Well, I insist we're going here. Well, I don't really like, well, I insist. All right? Well, yes. Is there a reason why you don't want to go there? Well, you know, whatever it is. Now, you got to be careful when someone wants to rule from that point. That's their heart. All right, the objector. But the point is, think about that as we deal with one another. All right. And interesting, in James 4:11. Do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law. Judge the law, but if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. The law. don't speak evil of another. Why? Because that can lead to willful false accusations against a brother, one another. You want false accusations to be on your book of life that you did against another? No. Sometimes we can exaggerate faults that people have. You know, a little here and all of a sudden it's this big. All right. Should we do that? Exaggerate faults one to another? See, sometimes that's just judge what it is. Sometimes we can repeat things over and over and over, a fault, and it really wears on you. Okay? Does that promote unity? Does it promote brotherly love? Does it deal with, you know, whatever it is? But those are things that you think about. And also, last point, again, you can finally get to the point of slander that you can have, that's lying about another. So those are things to deal with. We don't want to speak evil of one another. Can joking about someone else, is that can that have a kind of a wrong tone to it sometimes? Depends on the individual. All right. So be careful of our joking sometimes we do with others, especially if you don't know them so well. All right. And that can get old too, the same joke over and over. It's kind of a demeaning joke or something about intelligence or who knows what, okay, or physical features or whatever it is, okay? All right. Let's see. So think about that. And again, James 5:9 deals with the idea of complaining, grumbling, and moaning with your brother, and that deals with judgment. And we talked often about hypocritical judgment and hypocritical judgment. So be aware of that in Matthew 7. That's how we deal with one another. And then Hebrews 13:13. Remember those who have afflictions and hardships. Remember those who are in prison. Do visits and praying and helping. That's those things in life that we need to think about. Again, knowing one another. So these are all God things, all written down by the inspiration of God, written by the apostles. So again, these people apparently had problems with these items, which we do today also. But we can think about that in our one another relationship. All right? All right. Now, our next section, you'll probably have to do the questions on your own. All right? But anyway, we talked about Philippians 1:27 and being striving together, and that means teamwork. So if you have a team, say a football team, okay, and you got, they have different roles that they do, but all for the common purpose of the team working together to achieve the goal, okay, being in Christ, higher faith, okay, you do your job the best you can. I want to say job, the work, all right, your duties. So time is always a factor on that. Time is always a factor, and we need to think about that. And do we put the time in that we should? Imagine the work, you know, if you didn't put the time in. Talents, we all have different talents, different abilities, and we're developing those abilities. So let's work on that as we go through life. And number three is sometimes just funds we have. Am I contributing what I should be contributing to the work? If I'm dedicated and I'm in Christ, should I be doing what I can to support those things in Christ? This is, you know, the common fund. Okay? You have say-so. So think about that as you contribute. After all, it is a sweet swelling aroma. All right. And as we're talking about responsibility of the local church, that one another was to one another. But this next section is dealing with to the elders, the oversight, that sort of thing. And it's really, and since they're among you, just like you, learning one another, helping to deal with the flock, okay, being shepherds. And I'm going to hurry through this. But the idea that there's a certain sort of respect and honor and cooperation, 1 Thessalonians 5:12-13, that helps. Didn't it help if your boss at work or whatever it is, you appreciate them, you're trying to work to accomplish the goals that have been set before you at work, or you're straying off on your own, all right? Contrary, you know, to what the supervision would like, especially since it's in your best interest. All right, so those are things that cooperate and appreciation in that labor. And from time to time, it admonishes also there in that 1 Thessalonians 5 passages, admonishes to warn. Why would someone warn? You know, I was thinking about that. Some people don't take warning so well. But if you understand that the heart of the individual is talking to you should be for your good, for your relationship with Christ. If you understand that, then at least listen. And I was thinking, when I was working, we had job performance reviews. And sometimes, yeah, I'd have to fill out reviews. I got my own also. But, you know, you need to be more punctual when you come into work. Less tardy days, all right? You need to learn, I put down, you have to learn more about this topic or that topic, all right? And those are things to help in performance reviews, things to help the individual. Why? For their good. For their good. For the company's good. Less work that I got to change and go back over. All right? But those sort of things are kind of a parallel there. But the idea of think about that as we deal with the admonishment and the appreciation and that sort of thing. All right? We deal with the local oversight. We've gone to Hebrews 13:17. Anyway, this one deals with, there's a oversight is watchman, watching over the souls, helping. Do elders make mistakes? Sure do. Sure do. You know, it seems like you've seen it all till you've seen it all. All right? And so there's an idea there of doing things with joy and grief. One quick point. Okay. If cooperation exists, is there some joy to the work? There's some, I don't want to say prize, but there's some good things that come out of it. It's joy and cooperation one with another. All right? In a marriage, same way. If you cooperate, you deal with the common goal, the things that brings joy. And grief comes too. All right? But that's only when couples argue, right? All right, that happens. But the point is, think about that relationship of the oversight and then double honor. 1 Timothy 5. Okay, there's some that are paid for that. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate the course. And any questions, anytime, be glad to answer those, especially on the fill in the blank or whatever it is. Thank you very much. Appreciate you.